Good morning. Good morning. That's nice. It's always reassuring to know you're out there. Well, I have some good news. That which was lost has been found. And you can understand looking at this. Now, for those of you who weren't here last week, you're just going to have to go online and listen to the whole story. But you can understand why the person beside me, when I found this, and I'm all excited calling it Jeffrey's foot, why the person next to me was just kind of looking at it and kind of, if you say so, expression on her face. But I was telling the gals this morning, I would so love to bring that mold, because then except it's heavy, but then what I visualize is being able to hold it up to you, pick this up and go. And then you would all go, oh, yes, you know, that's Jeffrey's foot. And I was equating that to when the Lord might speak something to us in his word, and to us it's like, oh, I hear you, Lord. I know what you are saying to me. And for you it's exciting, it's wonderful, but it doesn't translate well when you're trying to tell a friend what the Lord showed you in the word, and they want to be enthusiastic, they want to share your excitement. But you can tell just by their eyes, they're listening to you, they're nodding, they're happy for you, but you realize something gets lost in the translation, they're not getting it. But you've also been that person, right? When somebody else has been telling you their revelation, their insight, and you're sitting there thinking, what am I missing here, you know? But that's what is so wonderful about the Lord. And that's why I love going through the book of Ruth yet another time, because for all the times I've gone through it, each time he shows me something new. And sometimes it's an insight that absolutely can be translated into something I share with all of you. Other times it's just a little thought, a little impression, but something that touches my heart. And it's my prayer that as you're going through this book, that beyond what you hear me sharing, you are receiving that little nugget, you know, that treasure that the Lord has for you in the book of Ruth. I just love this story, and I know from the feedback, which I always appreciate when you tell me that you're loving it too. That's such an encouragement to me, always. Well, you know how sometimes when you're in a movie, and the movie is just really getting to that good part, you know, the part you want to see, you want to watch, and suddenly it leaves that scene and it goes to some other scene. You know, whether it's a, what do they call it? The back, you know, the flashback. You know, whether it's something like a flashback from the story, or whether it's just going to another part of the story with other characters. But you want to be back to that scene and see what's going to happen. And of course, that's what the weekly programs do to us. They always leave you right in that place where you're going to get the information that you're looking for, you're going to see something happen that you have been wanting to see. That's when they end. That's when they go to another scene, you know. Well, I'm just giving you the heads up. That's what we're going to do this morning. You know, before following Ruth to the threshing floor and spending the night there with her and Boaz, I'm wanting us to just pause. I'm wanting us to look at Boaz, to look at Ruth, specifically to see their character. I also want to just touch on and refresh to you the meaning of the leveret custom and also the role of the kinsman redeemer, because those are two things that will be very, very important in this upcoming passage that we'll be turning to. So firstly, the leveret custom. This was the custom that was designed to perpetuate the family name in the event that the husband died before he had had a son. When the husband died, it was expected that the deceased man's brother, would marry his wife for the sole purpose of having a male child that would carry on the name. I remember when John Corson down at the Applegate Fellowship taught on this, he said it put a whole new spin on brothers meeting their future sisters-in-law. He said, you know, you picture them all coming around the table and they're meeting this girl that their brother wants to marry, and they're going, giving them signs. Because they're aware, potentially, this woman could become my wife. But the thing that I also love about this, even though it was God's means of protecting the family name, the part that I have always personally seen and loved is that, in my mind, it's an example of God's provision and God's protection to the woman who otherwise would be all alone. Naomi referred to this custom back in chapter 1 when she was telling Orpah and Ruth to return to their homes. Do you remember she was explaining to them that there'd be no future with her? And she said in the 11th verse, am I going to have any more sons that would become your husbands? And she reiterated again that that was not going to happen, saying, I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I had a husband tonight and had sons, would you wait for them to grow up? And she was saying this to help them to see clearly that staying with her, going to Bethlehem, would obliterate that kind of a future for them. There'd be no husband. There'd be no children. There'd be no family. And so she's emphasizing this to them, making sure that they would really be considering the cost. And we know that Orpah heard that news and followed Naomi's plea to return home to her own family. While Ruth, we know, did not. The second term we need to understand is kinsman. In the Hebrew, the word is goel, meaning redeemer. And this term implies certain obligations that come with that relationship. Its primary meaning is coming to the help or rescue. The goel is the nearest living male relative, but it's different from the leveret law, which limits that obligation of marrying and producing a son to only the brother. The nearest kinsman would come to the help or rescue where the land was concerned. He had a right to redeem the land, which might involve marrying the widow. We know that the book of Ruth infers that the duties of the kinsman or Goel, redeemer, was not limited to the redeeming of the land only, but also included marrying the widow of the deceased kinsman. The reason it is so important for us to have clarity on this is because this was the basis of Ruth's approach to Boaz. And it's very significant, it's very important that you see that. You know, last week we heard Naomi's detailed suggestion of her plan for Ruth to approach Boaz on the threshing floor. And when I was reading those verses, I happened to look up at some of you and saw something I really hadn't anticipated. And that is, several of you had the smile on your face like, you know, this is in the Bible? I mean, it was really kind of a funny look on your faces. And I thought, okay, we definitely need to go back and review this, because I agree with you. I totally get it. And I remember the first times of reading that passage myself and just thinking, whoa, Naomi, what are you saying to Ruth? What are you suggesting to her? But see, that's because I was responding to her direction from my 21st, or back then it was the 20th century, mind, perspective. And when we look at those verses from that perspective, it's no wonder that we would think, this is in the Bible, you know? Although I must say, there are some pretty incredible things in the Bible that I never expected to be there either when I read from one end to the other. But that's what I love about the Word, because the Lord doesn't sugarcoat things. And He doesn't have just the heroes and the villains. He'll have the hero, oh no, who becomes a villain, oh, who becomes a hero again. Yeah. But that's because the people in the Bible are just that, people. Like you and like me, you know? We are all sinners, and that's the truth, and how we really need to see that. And as I get older, I grasp more and more why Paul said at the end of his life, I am the chiefest of sinners. And whether it's part of getting older, being honest before the Lord, I'm not sure what the reason, but I know I am so aware, not in feeling condemned, not that at all, but I am so aware of the sinful nature that apart from the Lord would run my life. And I'm so grateful that the Lord doesn't ask me to live apart from Him, that He indwells me, and that He will always enable me to make the godly decision, to do the right thing. He'll always enable me. So does that equal, therefore, I can say it's been how many years since I've sinned? 5 minutes? You know, that's the reality, because we are sinners saved by grace. So I love that, and I want us to see clearly that the motive, the plan, everything, and what Ruth was going to do in going to the threshing floor was based on that whole approaching Him as the kinsman redeemer. Remember how Naomi started that conversation with Ruth? That in itself should tell us everything. She said, is not Boaz a kinsman of ours? Remember, that was her joy, her enthusiasm, when Ruth told her whose field she'd been working in. She immediately remembered Boaz. You know, God bless him. You know, that man is a kinsman redeemer. You know, she knew, she saw. So even back then, and we joked, you know, the wheels probably started turning in her plans. So she was aware that Boaz could be that Goel, that kinsman, that man who could come to their help and rescue them. So make it clear in your brain, Ruth's going to the threshing floor was not to allure him. Remember, she wasn't even to appear on the threshing hold while it was day. In other words, Naomi didn't want Boaz looking across the way and seeing Ruth all cleaned up, smelling good, in a pretty dress, thinking, whoa, Ruth really cleans up good. That is not what Naomi wanted. And so Naomi said, make sure you're not seen. You know, approach him after it's dark. If you see through that lens of how she was approaching him, you will see clearly that it had nothing to do with, you know, alluring him, let alone seducing him. You know, had she done that, had she gone and just kind of walked around in front of him, that would have been confusing. That would have muddied the waters, so to speak. It would have been confusing to Boaz, because seeing Ruth like that would not reflect the Ruth he knew her to be, right? So that part is so important for us to really see, to recognize, because that wouldn't have even been proper. And Ruth would have only done that which was right. So she approached him strictly along the line of being the kinsman redeemer, not because she had a romantic interest in him, though I believe she did. It's so important that we see this clearly. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to now take a little closer look at Boaz and Ruth to be sure we have a clear picture of these two, to be reminded of their character. And once we've done that, then we'll follow along after Ruth and observe their night on the threshing floor. First, let's consider the character of Boaz. In chapter 2, he was introduced to us by the author before we actually met him. The Amplified translation describes him as a man of great wealth and influence from the family of Elimelech. The NIV says that he was a man of standing. But this is a time when I especially like the King James Version, because in there's a hint which makes his role more obvious. It says that Boaz was a kinsman of Naomi's husband, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech. When we first met him, we joked, saying that if the author had been speaking to today's audience, he probably would have said, Boaz, a kinsman of her husband's, a knight in shining armor, because that is an expression that gets our attention and we would immediately know the hero has just come on the scene. A few verses following that introduction, we meet Boaz, the man. The King James Version again says in verse 4, "Behold Boaz." Behold, I love that word. It would be comparable to hearing trumpets, you know, going doo-doo-doo, you know, that it's saying, look, get your attention on this. And when we meet Boaz, he doesn't disappoint us. We get an immediate glimpse into his priorities and his personality with the very first sentence that we hear come out of his mouth. His words reveal that he's a man of faith. As he arrives in the field and sees his workers, he doesn't comment on how hot it is today or ask them how productive their day has been. He greets them with a blessing, saying, "The Lord be with you." And we see the warm rapport with his workers when they respond, "The Lord bless you." To me, that greeting reveals that he had a relationship with the Lord, that God is uppermost in his mind. We also see that he has a personal interest in his workers. He knows them. He knows them enough so that he immediately recognizes an unfamiliar young woman in their midst and asks about her. Now, because verse 11 tells us he had already heard about her, and he added that, you know, essentially everything he heard about her was good, I've often wondered, had he been kind of keeping the lookout? You know, remembering that Bethlehem is a very small town at this time. So he hears these things about Naomi. He hears about her daughter-in-law, Ruth. And I've just wondered, did he have that expectation that eventually he would meet her? He would bump into her, so to speak. And is that exactly what happened as he looked out and discovered her in his field? As Boaz is told Ruth's identity, we see another commendable aspect of his character, and that is he takes the initiative to be gracious and kind and extends to Ruth what she refers to, what she calls, great favor. He invites her to continue gleaning in his fields. He promises protection, then even offers her water and food, welcoming her later to come sit with him and his workers. That was a position that Ruth, as an alien, would never have expected to be offered. He also acknowledged and commended her for her kindness and the loyalty that she had shown towards Naomi. He even speaks blessing upon her when he says, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." You know, just listening to the tone of his words would be enough, in my mind, to make any woman swoon. In Matthew 12:34, Jesus said, "Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks." And if the words that came from Boaz were from the overflow of his heart, we know that there was only good there. We also see that Boaz is benevolent. Although Ruth was a gleaner, He basically promotes her, giving the higher rank of working with his servant girls. Do you remember that? That's an easy thing to kind of slip over and not realize, you know, she's out there as a gleaner. And because that's kind of foreign to us, his servant girls would have preceded her both in position, you know, rank, but also on the field. They would have been ahead. A gleaner came back behind everyone else and got any other little things that might remain. And instead, Ruth calls her up and tells her to work with his servant girls. And then didn't you love it when he told his men to just pull out stalks from their bundles and just purposely drop them in front of her where she could get them? You know, so whether it was in the provision of lunch or in the loads of barley being dropped literally in front of her, Ruth experienced unexpected abundance at the hands of Boaz. So when you think of Boaz, what's there not to like? What's not to trust? Now let's turn our attention to Ruth. We know from chapter 1 that she is a Moabitess by birth. And while the Moabite people worship many false gods, we know from Ruth's confession to Naomi that she wants Naomi's God to be her God. And she was willing to leave all that was familiar to her to follow Naomi and her God. We see that Ruth is faithful, self-sacrificing, loving. We're not told how long she'd been widowed, but we see that she chose to stay in the home of her mother-in-law. It would be a reasonable thing to assume that after her husband died, she would just return to her own family, her own home. But she didn't do that. And while their home was not described to us, we did take the liberty of picturing what that home must have been like with three widows living in it. And we couldn't imagine a whole lot of laughter taking place there. We couldn't envision some kind of up atmosphere, gay atmosphere. We talked about the fact that they didn't even have children, and children have a wonderful way of lightening heavy times because they just don't grasp the significance of all that's happening. And so they say things that just make you laugh. They do things that just lighten your mood. But we know that home did not have children. So we picture that that was a pretty depressed place. And yet, we know that Ruth chose to stay there. And truly to me, that's our first hint that she wasn't one who thought only about herself. And it also reveals to me how much she loved Naomi. That love was confirmed on the road back to Bethlehem, wasn't it? When she begged Naomi not to ask her to leave. Remember, Naomi was pleading with her daughters-in-law, telling them to go back. And she wouldn't do it. She just begged Naomi back not to make her leave. And she vowed that she wanted to forsake everything else. And that meant including any chance of remarriage. And that is something Naomi wanted for her. All she wanted to do was to stay with Ruth, to care for Ruth, to not let Ruth just return all alone. This is significant because, again, the reminder that the story takes place in the days when the judges ruled. And I keep reminding you of that because this is such a sweet little story. It's very easy to forget that the backdrop, remember I said it's black? It was dark times, dangerous times for women alone. Women would only feel safe in the home of a husband. So that the fact that Ruth would give that up, knowing the kind of life she was probably going to live, just attests to the fact that she was selfless. She was also loyal. You know, in order to remain with Naomi, she was willing to deny the security of the familiar. And I don't know if you're one of those people. I tend to be that way. I don't see myself as an adventurous person. I take a certain amount of comfort in the same old, same old. I was saying this morning, I'm one of those people, I find a seat, that's where I tend to go back every single week. You know, it's just the way I am. Other people are adventurous. They come not having a clue where they're going to sit until they walk in. I think that's great. But Ruth didn't, you know, go for that security. She was willing to leave her country, her birth family, her friends, the lifestyle that she knew in Moab. She was willing to turn from the knowns to the unknowns. And there was no expectation of personal gain or a happy, fulfilled life, only the desire to remain at Naomi's side and to serve her. We see that Ruth was humble. Remember that scene of when they returned to Bethlehem and all the people are greeting Naomi? There's Ruth at her side. She has professed her undying love towards Naomi, her love for her God. She's promised Naomi, wherever you go, I'll go. Wherever you stay, that's where I'm going to stay. I mean, she had literally laid down her life saying, nothing but death can separate us. And do you remember what Naomi said to those in Bethlehem who greeted her? She said, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. There's Ruth at her side. You know, don't you think that she might have wanted to go? You know, or nudge Naomi? You know. But we're not told that she said one word. That takes humility. She didn't mind not being noticed, not being recognized, let alone not even being introduced to these other townspeople. That, to me, is huge. And we know, too, that we saw that same humility in her interaction with Boaz. We see in chapter 2 that Ruth is practical, industrious, submissive, and courageous. When there's no food in the house, Ruth doesn't just sit watching Naomi thinking, okay, this is your town, what are you going to do for us? You know? No. She volunteers to go to work by gleaning in the fields. And she doesn't just announce this to Naomi, but she asks Naomi's permission, which to me is pretty amazing, because in doing that, she is an adult, but what she is doing is she's acknowledging Naomi's authority in her home. And after she receives Naomi's go-ahead, she heads out to a world she doesn't know. And again, because she's a woman alone, she's heading out, putting herself in a very vulnerable position. We also see in chapter 2 that she's a hard worker, working, the foreman told Boaz, steadily all morning. And when she returns home that night, it's with 30 pounds of barley. Keep in mind, she doesn't have a four-wheel drive. She doesn't have a donkey or a servant. 30 pounds. I don't know what you might carry that would be 30 pounds. I remember the first time, or one of the first times when I read this, at that time I had horses. And I'm trying to think, so 30 pounds, how much is 30 pounds? And I immediately had my mind's eye, the big bags of horse feed would get at the Grange. Now let me tell you, and I'm very happy to say in those days I could pick up those 30 pounds. But 30 pounds was a lot of weight. And who knows how far Boaz's field was from Naomi's home. So picture this, you know. She comes in the door, 30 pounds of grain she's carrying. Wouldn't you just kind of picture, I know if I picture myself, I picture dropping it as soon as I could, finding the nearest chair, sitting back, putting my feet up, maybe getting a drink of water or something, but it would all be about me because I would have been working hard all day long. Is that what we're told Ruth does when she walks in the door? She immediately is thinking of Naomi. And I love that. That tells us that she was generous. She was thoughtful. She was cheerful. She was encouraging. Don't you love people who are cheerful in your lives? Don't you love those people in your lives that are encouragers to you? And I'm not talking about the person who always has some, you know, some word that's supposed to make you feel good, but it's like, okay, everybody's heard that a million times kind of thing. I'm talking about the person who can look at you, who can hear what you're going through, and not give you some pat answer, but say a word that immediately lightens your load. Doesn't make everything better, doesn't fix anything, but lightens you, encourages you. See, that's how I see Ruth. I see her definitely cheerful in her basic personality. And I see that especially in that interaction, that dialogue with Naomi when she got back. And when she's seeing the change in her mother-in-law's face as she comes in with this haul, and her mother-in-law is thinking, whoa. Who did you work with today? Whose field did you work in? And then when she's hearing and her face starts brightening, you know, in my mind, and I said this when we went through it, you know, I see Ruth so happy To see this change in her mother-in-law, we pondered how long had it been since that shadow had been removed from her mother-in-law's face. You know, and I see Ruth just loving it and milking the situation, you know, when she says, you know, he even told me that I could stay and work in his field all the time, you know, that she just loved seeing what was happening to Ruth as she gave her the information about her day. If you are a person who can encourage others, realize that's a gift from the Lord. But it's something the Lord would have for each one of us. We'll all be in those times where we need to be on the receiving end of encouragement. But let us also be people who purpose to be cheerful, who purpose to be encouragers. We have every reason to be joyful. And that has nothing to do with our circumstances, does it? It's not about what our lives are. It's about who our lives belong to. You know, the joy of the Lord is our strength. And I really believe that we saw so much of that in Ruth's character. We see that she is obedient. When Naomi came up with her little scheme in chapter 3, Ruth didn't protest, even though she may really have been unfamiliar with the whole kinsman redeemer. Yeah. Instead, she doesn't argue, she just says, I will do whatever you say. Last week I shared that Naomi knew her daughter-in-law Ruth and had great confidence in her moral character. That Naomi also believed in the character of Boaz. She saw him as a man of spiritual and moral integrity, didn't she? There's no question in Naomi's mind. These two people could be counted on to do the right thing. And I'm hoping that by taking this morning to just pause and look at the character of Boaz, the character of Ruth, that we find ourselves sharing Naomi's conviction. We know that these two can be counted on to do the right thing. Now, next week, we can go to the threshing floor. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for this wonderful story that never ceases to bless me. And Lord, you just show us in these four chapters that if we take the time to look, if we take the time to pause, to ponder, to meditate, Lord, you will extract treasures from us from a single sentence. That you would shed light on things that perhaps at first reading we would just read right on over. And I thank you for that, Lord. Lord, I'm not sure exactly what you had to say to each one of us personally. But I would hope that as we looked at the character of Boaz, the character of Ruth, that we would have allowed you to shine your light on us, that we might ask ourselves, if someone were going to examine me, what would they see in my character? Lord, that's why we pray that when people see us, they'll see you. Because you are the best thing in us, Lord. And with you, we can display the fruit of your indwelling Holy Spirit. And Lord, that's what I want, and I know you want for each one of us. So have your way in our lives, Lord. And as we go to the groups now to share our prayer concerns and to pray for one another, Lord, continue to knit our hearts together. We give you thanks for today. In Jesus' name, amen.